When you were a kid, or maybe a grown-up, did you ever play with Matchbox cars?
Matchbox announces 10 cars America has been waiting for.
We're looking for a family car that's sporty enough for me,
yet practical for me.
I need a car that's built the way I use it. Tough.
Like every Matchbox car, each of our 79s has a sticker price of about a buck. No matter who you are, Matchbox has the car that says you.
I want a car that lets me express the real me.
Now, 40 years after that commercial came out, Matchbox cars have a place in the National Toy Hall of Fame. Joining them are Magic the Gathering, the card game, and the coloring book. So what makes all those toys Hall of Fame worthy? Chris Bench is the chief curator at the Strong National Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. That's where you'll find the National Toy Hall of Fame. Chris, good to have you back on the show.
Great to be with you, Rob.
Well, we've talked to you in previous years about the newest inductees. Before we get into the class of 2019, remind us how it works, how we get into the National Toy Hall of Fame.
Well, anyone can nominate a toy to the National Toy Hall of Fame. In fact, last year we heard from 4,700 people nominating more than 600 different toys. So then we take all those nominations, we look for the ones that have toys that have longevity, at least 20 continuous years on the market. We look for toys that are recognizable. We sometimes call them iconic. And third, these are toys that have the best qualities of play. So learning, creativity, discovery, socialization, these aren't the toys you shove under your bed after your birthday and forget about them.
And this is toys kind of broadly defined. It might be a game. It might be an object that we play with, like a stick or a rock.
That's right. We define toys really widely, as people do.
I could nominate, for example, the chair I like to spin around the studio with before the show starts. Can I put that up for next year?
You may. I want to see that in our inbox right away.
Well, it's an injury waiting to happen. Let's get to the new inductees, Chris. And let's start off. We just heard about the Matchbox car, the earlier ads. Now, this is interesting. Hot Wheels, as I understand it, they were already in the Hall of Fame, but Matchbox actually came first historically.
That's right. And I have personally, as a Matchbox fan, felt that that was a little bit of a crime that Matchbox was boxed out of the Hall of Fame and Hot Wheels zoomed past them as they did in 1968 when, with those super slick axles, they were faster than any other toy car. Matchbox caught up with its super fast line, and today they are both part of the stable of toys at Mattel and live happily side by side in kids' and grown-ups' garages.
Right. They were competitors in the toy car market until Mattel ended up buying Matchbox too. But they kept them, it sounds like, as unique product lines. Is that right?
That's right. Matchbox have always been a little more realistic than Hot Wheels. I know that I loved them for their hoods and doors that opened, other details that were just like the cars that I saw on the street, not quite so cartoony or race car as the Hot Wheels line.
And then another inductee this year, this is newer than Matchbox or Hot Wheels. It's a game, Magic the Gathering, this collectible card game that just took over the game market. I was there at Ground Zero when it happened, and I remember it mostly fondly, though it could get expensive, Chris. Talk about why Magic the Gathering made it into the National Hall of Fame.
Well, a couple years ago, we inducted Dungeons & Dragons into the National Toy Hall of Fame, and this is kind of a card version of that paper and pencil game with fantasy and spells and wizards and enchantments and all sorts of competition. What made Magic the Gathering unique was that everyone assembles their own deck of 60 cards. So you sort of literally stack the deck in your favor, you hope, by what cards you collect. And Rob, how did you do in your competitions?
You know, what ended up happening, so we didn't spend too much money, we had this arms limitation agreement, basically, where we would buy decks of cards together and draft them, so it wasn't a matter of who spent the most money. I still, in practical terms, I was never very good at it, but I did play and try to keep up.
So you were only a minor part of the 20 billion Magic
correct.
Gathering cards that have been sold.
That is correct, yes. I might have had a three-digit number of cards, I'll say that, by the time I peeked out there. But people had many more.
And no Black Lotus in your collection.
I never had a Black Lotus.
One.
Right. Those are still good for a lot of money, right?
More than $100,000 the
wow.
last time I checked.
Wow, I'll check my cupboard again and see if I have one of those lying around. We're talking to Chris Bench with the National Toy Hall of Fame, looking at the newest inductees this year. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of these three, the Matchbox car, Magic the Gathering, the collectible card game, or the coloring book? Or do you have a favorite toy from your own childhood and or your kid's childhood that you would want to nominate for the Hall of Fame, or just find out if it's in there or make the case for it? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, that leaves another new inductee, the coloring book, Chris. And that seems like it's made a comeback, too.
It has. It's been around since the late 1800s as a paint book. Parents hated those. Paint was so messy. Thank goodness Crayola crayons in the early part of the 20th century made coloring so much neater. Crayola crayons got into the Hall of Fame the very first year, 1998, and it's been a little bit of a gap that the coloring book wasn't in to accompany Crayola crayons.
Can you talk a little bit about the history of coloring books and how they've changed over the years to where we've now got a lot of grown-up coloring books?
Grown-up coloring books has been a huge growth industry in the last decade. They have taken on bestseller status. This isn't just your kid's My Little Pony or superheroes coloring book. Dinosaurs are classics for kids, but grown-up themes, complicated artwork for people who are interested in beautiful achievements and maybe some kind of serenity that we don't achieve with our electronic devices. Turn those off, do something analog, and create a picture that you can be proud of, even if you don't have artistic skills.
Yeah, that's me in that last category. And I got to say, people do these for stress relief. I was never good at coloring inside lines, not because I'm a rebel. I'm just really terrible. I find them kind of stressful. Are you a coloring book guy to this day, Chris?
I am not. I haven't caught the bug on that, but maybe I need to put one on my holiday gift list and give it a whirl in the new year.
Okay, those are the three that made it in. What were some of the other nominees this year, the finalists that didn't quite make the cut?
Well, there was sort of a constellation of toys from the 80s. Care Bears, Masters of the Universe, and My Little Pony were all finalists. So if you grew up in that era, you were probably rooting for any one or multiples of those.
And there's because they have to have been around for a while, we might see a crop of toys from a particular generation all showing up at the same time, right?
That's right. And we also see popularity of toys sort of rise and crest as parents have kids and they look back to the toys of their own childhood. I turned out okay, so my kids should have the same toys.
Interesting. Now, are there toys that people nominate that you look back and say, it was kind of a one-hit wonder, it was a flash in the pan that lasted 3 years and didn't have that staying power?
There are lots of those. So that longevity criteria really winnows so many different toys out. And sometimes people say, why aren't there more dolls other than Barbie and Raggedy Ann in the Hall of Fame? It's because dolls don't seem to have as much staying power as some of the other games and toys on the market.
We're talking about toys and this year's inductees into the National Toy Hall of Fame. Coloring books, Magic the Gathering, and Matchbox cars are the newest additions. Chris Bench is our guest. He's the chief curator at the Strong National Museum of Play. That's the home of the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York. We'll go to your calls now. Linda is with us in Middleton. Linda, hi.
Hi, I'd say Play-Doh is my all-time favorite childhood toy. And when I would think it was about 8 or 9, my dad made me give up my blanket. And he said if I gave it up, I would get a toy. So I bought a Play-Doh machine.
Ooh, okay. Was this one of those machines that you could kind of squeeze the Play-Doh through in funky shapes?
Yes, and it broke in a couple weeks.
Oh, no. But you could still play with the Play-Doh then, right, Linda?
Exactly, yes.
All right. Linda, thank you so much for sharing that. Chris, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Play-Doh is already in the Hall of Fame, right?
It is. It got in the first class in 1998.
So it's definitely a classic. And did I read, I thought I read somewhere recently, Play-Doh was invented originally as a thing that you removed like smudges from wallpaper with?
Absolutely. You rubbed down this gunk on your wallpaper and took the soot and smudges off, something we don't even worry about today.
Let's talk about the invention of toys. I imagine that's a story you're interested in at the Museum of Play. Sometimes toys come from surprising places and people.
They do. In addition to Play-Doh, Silly Putty was going to be a replacement during World War II for hard-to-find rubber resources. It was stretchier than rubber, bouncier than rubber, but it had a problem for your environment and ours. It froze and shattered. So really rotten tires in Wisconsin and upstate New York.
Linda, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to John with us now in Atoma. John, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I used to play with Matchbox. They were a big thing with me when I was growing up in the 60s. I grew up, but one of my favorite toys that I can remember was the old cap guns, the old cowboy cap guns. I had the holster and the chaps and the vest and the hat. We used to play cowboys, you know.
And did you sync them up with cowboy movies and TV shows, John?
Yeah, because back then, you know, remember there was Bonanza and Gunsmoke and all them shows going on, you know, so it kind of was a spin-off from them old Westerns, too, you know.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Is the cap gun in the National Toy Hall of Fame, Chris?
It is not in yet, but certainly the way Westerns dominated the TV airwaves in the 50s and 60s, cap guns are in the museum's collection of more than 500,000 items. They just haven't made it into the Hall of Fame yet.
Now, he mentioned, Bonanza and other shows. You could add cap guns without those. But often toys are inspired by TV shows and, I guess, vice versa. Do a lot of those product tie-ins, Chris, end up being classic toys?
They do. The big one I always think of is Star Wars action figures that prove to toy makers that you could make more money off the products than the movie makers made off the film.
Thanks, John, for the call. Rob joins us next in Winona, Minnesota. Rob, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What toy do you have for us, Rob?
Well, I have a question about Matchbox because, of course, Matchbox started in England before it came to the United States. And so I wonder if the English Matchbox cars are included in the Hall of Fame. Those are my favorites.
Rob, thanks. Chris, do you distinguish between the English and the American Matchboxes?
We do not. We have inducted the entire run of Matchbox when they were made by Lesney in England and when they've come here to the United States under a number of different corporate sponsorships.
Do we have to roll the English ones down the other side of the track? Was that a distinction they made?
They put out a lot of English models initially, so it took a while before they caught on that Americans wanted to see American-made cars.
Rob, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Chris Bench from the National Toy Hall of Fame. Three new inductees this year, the coloring book, the Matchbox car, and the card game Magic the Gathering. Back to your calls now. Jeff is with us calling from Crandon. Jeff, hi. Jeff, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Yep. What toy did you want to bring up, Jeff?
The G.I. Joe figures.
Ooh, and now did you play with the big ones from like the 70s or the like shorter ones from the 80s era?
80s.
Okay. Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, the G.I. Joes were invented and reinvented over time, Chris.
They have morphed, definitely. And they were 12-inch toys. I almost said the four-letter word that they were never to be described as dolls. Hasbro said you would be fired if you used that term around them. But action figures, that's how they were introduced in the 1960s. And you're right. To compete with Star Wars action figures, they shrank down, they lost detail, they became all plastic in the 1980s. And that's the form that they most frequently continue today with a whole slew of characters.
We're in my zone for toys here, me and my younger brother. And now the Star Wars guys, you couldn't bend them at the elbows or the knees, but the G.I. Joe people, you could. That was quite an advancement as we saw it at the time.
The articulation that G.I. Joe has always had at his joints, yes, the posing, and that they stayed in the position that you molded them to.
And are the Star Wars toys is G.I. Joe in the Toy Hall of Fame?
He is. He got in there before Star Wars, as we might think is appropriate. So they're both coexisting in the Hall of Fame.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Dan with us now in Wisconsin Dells. Dan, hi.
Hello there. I'm calling about the Evel Knievel motorcycle that probably came out in maybe the early 80s. You would slap him onto this. I don't know how to describe it, but you would wind it up and then he would take off. He would do willies. And then they came out with the... the rocket, but the Evel Knievel rocket, but the rocket was the same as it. It was a big dud. In fact, my cousin Dave got it for Christmas, and he cried because me and his brother got the motorcycles.
Oh no, Dannon, did you have him? Do you have Evel Knievel jump over the canyon?
Well, they lived. They had a step down living room, and we always thought that his dad built that living room just for that purpose because it would fly a good 20 feet.
Nice.
It was probably the coolest toy ever.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate that. Chris, has Evel Knievel made an appearance in the Toy Hall of Fame?
He has not. He's an example of one of those brief popularity toys. He is sensationally popular amongst his fan base, up there with Stretch Armstrong from a similar vintage.
Thanks a lot for that call. That reminds me, my first pinball machine in my non-illustrious pinball career was an Evel Knievel machine. Is the pinball machine in the Toy Hall of Fame?
It is. It was an inductee just last year, and we have hundreds of pinball machines at the Strong Museum, so I am prepared to sell you tokens when you come to visit.
Do you have Evel Knievel?
You know, with all the pinball machines, I can't think of that off the top of my head. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for that call. Greg joins us now in Madison. Greg, hi.
Hi. I had an action figure. This falls underneath that G.I. Joe thing, but the $6 million man action figure with the I had the whole set, so it was the actual office. When I say set, it was like the
TV show set.
The TV show set, right. There was a desk, and there was an exploding briefcase, and I had the Oscar Goldman, you know, his boss doll. Doll. I just said doll.
Uh-oh.
It was fun. It falls under that G.I. Joe. I mean, there was that 12-inch articulating, you know, action figure.
And, Greg, thank you so much for that call. Who wouldn't want to recreate Oscar Goldman from the $6 million man, Chris?
I don't know. And there was the Bionic Woman doll slash action figure, too. So you could have an entire clan of action figures out there from that era in the 70s.
I'm guessing that one was too short-lived, Chris, to make it into the Hall of Fame.
It was, but I just included her in an exhibit, and the $6 million man is also on display.
Fantastic. Greg, thanks for calling in. Pete joins us next in Milwaukee. Pete, hi.
Hello, I'm here.
What'd you want to bring up, Pete?
Well, I wanted to ask about whether the Parker Brothers Game of Risk was in the Hall of Fame, because Risk has been around since the 60s, played it with my cousins when I was 10 years old, and so it's way back historical, but it's been reinvented many, many times, something like Monopoly, with different skinning of different types of themes. So I would think that would be in there. It is like the granddaddy of the modern war game, chess being the granddaddy of all others.
Pete, thanks a lot for the call. I think you've got bad news, Chris.
I do. Risk was a finalist this year. It didn't make it in. I agree. It is a classic war game. It stayed up on a card table in our house day after day because we could never finish it in one sitting. I was always holding out in Kamchatka while the armies closed in around me.
Thanks for the call, Pete. Are there toys and games that are finalists year after year but never quite make the cut?
You know, My Little Pony is a 5-time finalist.
Wow.
After being cut out of the rodeo again this year. So it is the one that is probably most yearning to be in the Hall of Fame. But yes, there are some repeaters, like Magic 8-Ball, I think had been 6 or 7 times before it made it into the spotlight.
Thanks for that call. Let's bring on Helen in La Crosse. Helen, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Helen? Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask your guest. I teach recreation and play and leisure and toys, and we spend a little bit of time talking about toys that the children in the Holocaust, who were in concentration camps or in ghettos, the toys that the children made up are out of scraps. And I wonder if your guest included this in his museum.
Helen, thanks for the call. Chris, have you done an exhibit along those lines, or would you consider doing something like that?
We certainly would consider it. We haven't had the opportunity to share those kinds of toys in our museum. We've had handmade toys from scrap materials, from people in impoverished areas of the world on display. Some of those handmade toys are some of the hardest to get our hands on as curators. They don't show up on eBay the way that branded toys mint in box do. So I'm always looking for those kinds of crafted, really meaningful, repurposed items that are so important to kids who may not have anything else.
Thanks for that call, Helen. And in our last half a minute, Chris, that speaks to the power of play, that in the worst of circumstances, we will figure out something to play with.
We do. The year that we inducted the cardboard box back in 2005, we got so much praise for that, and I still look at every refrigerator box with special affection.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Chris Bench, Chief Curator of the National Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. It's home to the National Toy Hall of Fame. We talked to him about this year's inductees, Matchbox Cars, Magic the Gathering, and coloring books, as well as other classic toys. If you want to make the case for your favorite or share any thoughts on this year's inductees, you can do that at the Ideas Network Facebook page.